from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Mina Kim.
On your marks, get fit, bake.
That's from the Great British Baking Show, which gets credit for luring more people into the ranks of amateur bakers. Coming up on Forum, we're heading into the kitchen to talk about the rising popularity of baking. Here in the Bay Area, we have a variety of baking traditions, including Asian-inspired bakeries adding their touch to a baking scene that includes some bakeries that have been around for decades, even a century. We'll be joined by some of the best bakers around. They'll share their insights and tips for making the best cookies, pies, and other baked goods. We'll get started right after this news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Mina Kim. Well, the holidays are a good excuse for amateur bakers to try their hand at cookies, pies, and other desserts, as if you need an excuse, right? But year-round now, baking is becoming more popular than ever. Call it the Great British Baking Show effect, perhaps. And this hour, we're going to talk with some of the best in the business. Let me tell you who's here with us. Alice Medrich is an award-winning cookbook author. Her new book is Holiday Cookies, the ultimate chewy, gooey, crispy, crunchy treats. Alice, good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
And also here, Jen Musty. She's owner and founder of Batter Bakery. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Joyce Tang, founder, owner of chief baking officer, at La Chinoiserie Bake Shop. Good to have you as well. And can I just say that this studio smells like a bakery? We brought in some treats. And we have some recipes, I should say, online that you've also given us, so you can check that out. And let's open up the phone lines early because I'm sure people are going to want to weigh in. What baking, questions or tips do you have? You can join us at 866-733-6786. Well, let me just begin by asking each of you, and I'll start with you, Alice. When you think of holiday baking, or the holidays, what comes to mind?
Our family's big with Thanksgiving, so most of my memories are Thanksgiving. And we have, for example, I think about my mother's apple pie, which way back when I was still young, and she was younger than I am now, she changed it and she kept on changing it. And I picked it up at some point and the pie became a crisp to make it easier, to make it less fat, to make it, it went through all of these metamorphoses over the years. So when we taste that crisp, and it is a crisp today, it still reminds me of the pie of my childhood. It has this wonderful lineage.
Yeah. Joyce, what about you? What are your sort of childhood memories of baking? You have any. Not everybody does,
I think the thing that's kind of a little bit different about my childhood, being Chinese American, we're not actually like Christian. So Christmas for us is kind of fun to have a tree, to have the presents. But for us, we celebrate the winter solstice instead, which is basically a family gathering where we eat little balls of glutinous rice in sweet soup. So it's like called a tangren. And we have that, and it symbolizes family togetherness and union in the perfect circle of a kind of glutinous rice ball.
And Jen, what about you? What comes to mind for the holidays? Probably a lot of work for one thing, right?
That is for sure. But in my childhood and growing up, I think most of the sort of traditional all-American Christmas, tons of holiday cookies, gingerbread, muffins, scones, like all of these wonderful things, the house just smelling like wonderful smells. And later on, I remember coming home from track practice, and after everyone was asleep, I would sneak into the freezer or the cabinet and get some extra holiday cookies to keep me going while I did my homework. So holiday cookies have always been a really big part of my life, and excited to be able to share them with the rest of the world now.
And Alice, like everything, cooking and baking has evolved, over the years. I remember when I was a kid, my mom used to buy those sort of tubes of cookies, the pre-made dough. Maybe those are still around. I don't know.
They are.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, tell that they are.
Yeah.
Ever ubiquitous.
So yeah. How do people are making time, obviously.
I've recently noticed that younger people are finding baking to be this relaxing, de-stressing thing. And what it brings to mind is that even those of us in the business, I think, or who have been in the business, find it very, de-stressing, the sort of the ritual of it, the sort of the dance that goes on in the kitchen. And I think when it comes to like cookies, making them is so much more delicious and more satisfying than, you know, buying those slice and bake things.
Yeah.
And I think more people are discovering how easy cookies are, for example.
Yeah. Jem, what about you? You were sort of smiling there when she was talking. Is it de-stressing for you?
I think a little bit of a double-edged sword. I think it is de-stressing. Sometimes I do think often when I'm there late at night icing, you know, thousands and thousands of cookies, there is something very meditative about that. And I still do find it just really satisfying to get in there and get dirty. There's times when you have those tight time crunch deadlines where you feel a little bit overwhelmed and are your cookies going to dry enough to pack them? But it is something that when I do have people come and ice cookies with me, or we do icing classes, people say, wow, this is really relaxing. It's just like painting with sugar.
That's the most fun part, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
There was an article just a week ago or so in the New York Times about frosting cookies. Mm. And it was like trending number one for 5 days.
I did see that article. Yeah. But it's called procrastibaking. There's actually a term for this, like where people have to do, like, they have to meet these tight deadlines, whether it be for classwork or for work deadlines. But instead, they go to the kitchen and they bake cookies, or they bake bread, or they bake whatever, what have you. But it's called procrastibaking. There is a real term for that these days.
Well, it's a
good
way to procrastinate.
For those of us who write as well as bake, I've always noticed that when I get tired of sitting at the computer and trying to make the words work, because I'm a cookbook writer, I can go in the kitchen and it's not procrastinating. It's part of the work. And yet it's a total change of, you know, brain activity and just a great change up. It's better than going off and doing something entirely unrelated to the work.
Absolutely. And the recipe development, it just, you get that spark and you want to make something new immediately.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then tired of the kitchen, sit down and put down on the page what you just did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talking about holiday baking with Jen Musty from Batter Bakery, Joyce Tang, founder and chief baking officer at La Chinoiserie Bake Shop in San Francisco, and also Alice Medrich. And if you have questions for any of them, this is a great time to ask. Give us a call. We're going to keep the phone lines open all hour, the whole hour, and it's 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Or email us if you prefer. It's forum@kqed.org. And let's start with Chris in Sausalito. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. I have a question about pie baking. I have an electric oven, very good brand, German oven, same brand as the company that makes the vacuum cleaners.
Miele.
Yeah, okay. And every time we make pies and chill everything, even the rolling pin, the crust melts before the pie can cook. It just, the whole rim just starts dripping off the side of the glass pie pan and gets all over the bottom of the oven.
And are you making your dough from scratch?
Oh, yeah.
And are you working the butter in too finely so there aren't pieces in there?
No, I do that smear technique where you can actually see little chunks of butter.
How warm is your kitchen?
I live in Sausalito. It's not very warm.
Not very warm. Okay. Well, it's kind of a mystery.
Have you tried blind baking your crust at all, where you bake just the crust
with pie weights to keep things up,
and everything still melts? Can you tell me what proportions of butter to flour and water you use in the recipe?
I can't right off the bat.
Okay.
Have you tried switching recipes just in case you have a bad one?
Yeah, it sounds like a recipe issue.
What is your favorite ratio?
I don't have one off the top of my head, but the Tartine Bakery one is actually quite good.
Is it about 5 ounces of flour to 4 ounces of butter? Does that sound 3 to 4 ounces of butter? Go look in a trusted cookbook that does pies. Obviously, the three of us are not big
We're not pie bakers. Yeah. Sorry.
It sounds like it's just a little too much butter in your dough, to be honest, and that there's not enough structure to hold that in with the flour.
You probably want more gluten, essentially. Yeah.
What about, this is maybe not relevant to the question, but putting vodka?
That does a different thing.
What does that do?
That keeps things tender, keeps you from using too much liquid and can make tenderness, but it sounds like her problem is different. What kind of flour are you using?
And butter, if you don't mind us asking.
And what kind of butter?
Chris?
I think Kerrygold.
Okay, that's a great butter.
Yeah, and what about the flour?
King Arthur.
Should be pretty solid.
It's a mystery.
Try a new recipe. Like you might have a loser.
Is there a good website that bakers can send questions to?
Oh, Jean Rose's website.
Mm-hmm. Or look in some of the really old classics, you know,
Joy of Cooking.
Exactly. Sure. Something that has just nothing new, nothing fancy, mm-hmm. old-fashioned, all-American.
Yeah. Or switch to cookies.
Or do Alice's crisp instead.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. Well, hope we gave you some good suggestions, and good luck to you. All right. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. I mentioned at the top of the show the Great British Baking Show, which I have just recently gotten into because so many of my friends were watching. Do any of you watch that show, Alice?
I put it off for years until my best friend and my daughter insisted that I watch, and I loved it. It was really, really fun.
Have you watched, because it switched recently from, I guess, the BBC?
I haven't watched the new, No, I only watch BBC. But the reason it's hard to watch a baking show for me is it makes me anxious. It makes other people relax to watch. But for me, it's like I'm sitting there thinking, no, don't do that. That's wrong. Oh, please. So it's not relaxing.
Yeah, Jen, what about you?
I will say I'm honestly not a huge TV watcher, so in my day I have watched lots of competition shows, and I've definitely seen a few episodes of the Great British Bake Off, but it's not something that I come home from a full day of baking and glue myself to a TV watching more people bake.
Yeah, what about you, Joyce?
It stresses me out none other, just because you know how things should go in a professional kitchen, and many, many times the folks that are on the show, they're home bakers, and so those are kind of pet peeves that would annoy someone in a professional kitchen. And watching ice cream melt as it sits on the counter as they're doing something else they shouldn't be doing, it's just really scary. It's just too much for me, because
pastry people and bakers are very obsessive compulsive, and we really have our little rule. We may not have all the same rules, but we have our rules.
Well, and unlike cooking, it's much more precise, right? I mean, you have to measure things. You don't necessarily have to do that. Yeah, to the gram. In fact, there's even, I've read that there's problems with, measuring cups.
Totally.
They're not accurate enough.
Yeah, scale.
Doesn't show us. None of us use measuring cups is probably all I have to say.
Some of us have been preaching for 30 or 40 years how home bakers should be weighing.
Throw them all away.
Really?
Yes. Use a scale.
Is it the recipes call for a cup or?
Well, that's the problem.
Your
cup is not my cup, but we need more cookbooks that have grams or ounces in them.
But then you got to go buy a scale.
But it costs less than 10 lattes is the cost of a decent scale.
And you'll never have to pull out another cup or a teaspoon anything ever again. And when Alice makes a recipe or when I make a recipe, they're all going to be the same. There's no guesswork.
Yeah. The problem with a cup of flour is if I tell 10 people to go measure a cup of flour and I weigh those cups, I'm going to get a variance from 4 ounces to about 8, depending on
how people
settle.
Understanding of how you put flour in a cup.
Yeah.
So that's what
would give you the best?
It depends on the baker. See that there's
a lot of
lost in translation. So if I say if I say measure 100 grams, her 100 grams and your 100 grams and your 100 grams are all going to
be
the same.
Yeah.
But the assuming, cups
the,
are all over the
assuming
place.
The scale is accurate.
Scales are always pretty calibrated.
Better than the measuring cups.
Yes.
Okay.
Much better.
All right, let's go to the phones, and Donna in Richmond, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm home today listening to the show, and I'm baking cookies as we speak. I just took out
What are you baking?
I just took out a tray of arugula.
One of my favorites.
And I'm making sugar cookies, and my holiday tradition is Christmas cookies. I've been baking cookies with my mother, who's now gone, but since I was a young girl, and we always made 10 or 12 different kinds. We're from Italian, and we always gave them away as Christmas gifts, and so it's a very special time for me, and I think baking Christmas cookies is really one of my favorite things to do, and pass it on to my children, and it really makes it special.
And Donna, not everyone knows what arugula is. Describe it, and I've seen it with chocolate, I've seen it with raisins. How are you making yours?
So my recipe is very simple. It's just cream cheese and butter blended together, and then you just add flour and a little bit of salt, and you chill it, and then you take it out of the refrigerator, let it get a little bit warm, and then roll it out, and then put it. Then just put cinnamon sugar I take some pecans and I roast them a little, or roast them a little bit, and then top them up.
Yeah.
I'll mix that cinnamon sugar, or and then roll it up, and they're very light and flaky.
Yeah, is that kind of a Jewish origin? That's what I thought.
Well, Eastern European.
Yeah, and then sometimes I put, like today, I put raspberry jam with cinnamon sugar and then roll them up, and they seem to be a big hit. I make macaroons, I make sugar cookies, I make biscotti, I make quinoa.
I
made
some competition here.
Yeah,
all right. Well, Donna, we don't want to take too much time away from your baking, but thank you so much for calling. Good luck with the arugula. We've got some questions from some of our listeners here. Julia asks, how do you pack cookies for mailing? Mine end up crumbled, still delicious, but no longer pretty. Any thoughts about that?
Definitely. We pack and ship a lot of cookies, and I would say packing them neatly and tightly. We use a lot of great compostable cellophane bags that are nestled tightly, put them with crinkle around them, bubble wrap. I mean, definitely go overboard with the sort of cushioning supplies, especially if there's something really fragile and hand decorated. I always tell people to use the smallest box that everything can fit in and just wiggle it really around. You see those, you see how boxes are handled in the mail. So you want to make sure your cookies stay intact.
You shake it before you finish packing. Shake it to see how much it moves. And if
it's moving, add some more packing.
A little bit more, because you don't want it moving around in there.
You want some parchment or something in between each cookie, so that way they're not rubbing up against each other. And
sometimes I also, you know, that wrap that sticks to itself. You can lay out a piece of that, put the cookies on there like ravioli filling, put a top thing over it, and isolate each cookie. That's good for really thin, crisp little things. And then pack it with some padding in between it. I mean, like, that's an extreme
cling
situation.
Wrap, right? Or it's like
it's
a type
not
of cling,
cling, but it sticks together.
Right.
Is it hard
and
to get them off of that?
No,
thing?
Not at all. You just peel it. I use that to transport really fragile cookies to a shoot.
Okay.
For a book.
All right,
and,
great.
That's a great
it was
idea.
It was worked really well.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Alice Medrich, cookbook author. Her new book is called Holiday Cookies, The Ultimate Chewy, Gooey, Crispy, Crunchy Treats, along with Jen Musty. She's owner and founder of Batter Bakery, and Joyce Tang, founder, owner, chief baking officer at La Chinoiserie Bake Shop. Did I say that right?
Yep, perfect.
All right, good. So we would love to hear from you. Again, the number, if you'd like some tips or want to share some, maybe, 866-733-6786. And let's go to Oakland. And Linda, welcome.
Hi. My name's Arlinda, and I grew up on a farm. We used to make our pies with lard for the crust. Mm-hmm. And lard has a different consistency at room temperature than butter. Lard is butter melts at room temperature pretty much, and lard maintains its consistency. And it made wonderful flaky crusts. I don't know if anybody's using that anymore, but
that's like Crisco, isn't it?
It's even more stable than Crisco, and it makes the flakiest possible crust. But the trade-off is whether you like the flavor of the lard versus butter, and we tend to like butter a lot, but you can never get the amount of flake. And sometimes people mix Crisco butter, maybe even lard butter, to get the flavor from the Crisco, but the flake from the lard.
Linda, how do you see that trade-off?
I have tried some. I don't have a space here to make pie crusts anymore, but I have bought a pie with a butter crust for a party recently, and that crust was just kind of mealy. I mean, doughy, and reminded me that maybe I need to find space to make my own pies. But, you know, I don't see the taste as an issue because you've got a filling in there.
Yeah. All right.
If it's refined, you shouldn't be tasting any of the porky flavor. If you render off your own lard, then you're going to have meaty flavors in your pie.
All right, Linda, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Grace now, back in Oakland. Hi.
Hi. I hope I'm not people aren't getting bored with pie, but I just have one more comment about the woman who is having a problem with the butter separating in her crust. I recently made a pie for Thanksgiving where a lot of the comments on the recipe said they had that same problem. And what I did was after I rolled the pie out, the crust, and put it in the pie pan, I chilled it in the fridge for an hour and a half, and then I put it in the freezer while the oven was preheating, and I didn't have that problem.
Okay. So, what do y'all think of that?
That's valid.
It's reasonable.
Totally valid idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, Grace. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Joyce, how do you sort of, what's the fusion of the with Asian tradition and more Western kinds of baking at your shop?
Sure. So a lot of what I had been seeing in kind of the bakery marketplace was very high-end French desserts and slightly lower-end Asian desserts. Like you can probably get an Asian like pastry for $1 in Chinatown or something like that. But what I wanted to do was elevate those Asian flavors with more French techniques. So I make things like a spam musubi croissant, a green onion croissant.
Is this some of what you brought?
Yes,
some things here.
I
got a nice big box sitting over there
from my bake this morning. And then I also make a lot of chocolate type items just because I find that that kind of transcends all cultures. Everybody likes chocolate for the most part.
Yeah. We haven't really talked about cakes.
Yeah.
Are you really all focused on cookies at this point, at this time of the year?
I make a lot of cakes as well, wedding cakes, birthday cakes and everything like that.
Yeah. I guess holiday tradition is more cookies, right?
Yeah. We do a lot of sort of more rustic seasonal cakes. So we do a lot of seasonal fruit upside down cakes, lots of gingerbread, spice cake, apple cider cake, all kinds of good stuff.
Are people making gingerbread houses still on their own?
Some.
Mostly kits these days,
yeah.
Because they're so cheap. It's $10 for a ready-to-go prefab.
Are they any good?
Gingerbread house. No, they've been in the boxes for about a month. So,
well, do you actually eat them anyway? It's more about a...
That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
depends on the child or the adult.
Or the parent.
Yes.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. And Rachel in Palo Alto, welcome. And we're short on time, so
Hi.
If you could, before the break, so if you could be... To the point.
I'll be brief. Yes, and it's sadly not about pie. I also love baking, and as fate would have it, my daughter has an egg allergy. Mm. She can have baked egg yolk, and I see lots of recipes with egg whites only, but not very many with egg yolk. Mm. And I wonder if you could recommend some recipes or just some categories of baked
sure.
goods that
oh,
I could
totally.
Make for
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
Totally. A plain butter cookie that you can riff on and do a lot of different flavors on is more like a shortbread mm-hmm. type of thing, doesn't have any eggs to begin with, or has an optional egg yolk for tenderness. A sugar cookie. Well, some of them have.
Jen, yeah. did you want to say something?
Our gingerbread are egg free. Yeah, we find that a lot of our cookies are actually egg free. All of our shortbread, gingerbread, yeah. we do our peanut butter blossoms. A lot of mm-hmm. them are actually even better without mm-hmm. the eggs, I feel like.
It's kind of better to pick a recipe that already doesn't have the egg than try to
exactly.
turn
adapt
that
it.
Cat
you
into
said
a dog.
That she could use yolks. So, yeah. But yolks just make a much richer pastry. Yeah. So any recipe you see egg yolk plus egg white, just use all yolk.
All right. Rachel, hope that was helpful. We are going to continue this little conversation for the rest of the hour. We'd love to hear from you. 866-733-6786. I think there might be one open phone line. And you can email us, of course, as always. It's KQED forum at kqed.org, or you can tweet us. We're at KQED forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Mina Kim, and lots more to come. Stick around. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and we're talking about baking for the holidays. Who's here with us in the studio? Jen Musty, owner and founder of Batter Bakery. Joyce Tang, founder and owner of La Chinoiserie Bake Shop. And Alice Medrich, award-winning cookbook author. Her latest book is titled Holiday Cookies, the Ultimate Chewy, Gooey, Crispy, Crunchy Treats. If you want to join us, give us a ring at 866-733-6786. And joining us now by phone is Charles Ferrier. He is the owner and baker at Crumble & Whisk over in Berkeley. Good to have you with us, Charles.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
What are you up to for the holidays?
So traditionally, our bakery, we bake artisan-style cheesecakes. But we also do more items other than that. We get a lot of requests for full-size cakes, wedding items, and cookies as well. And also, we've been getting a lot of cobblers. So that's something that we've been working on a lot.
And to what extent is what you make seasonal? You know, because I think of cobblers like peach. Obviously, there's no stone fruit right now.
Mm-hmm. So currently, we source off of seasonality. So currently right now we're using a lot of fall flavors. So maple, pumpkins, different type of winter squashes, apples. We're using a lot of different type of apples. We have a apple spiced cheesecake that we make in our shop. We also have a harvest pumpkin cheesecake that we make.
Hmm.
And then one of my personal favorites, we have a pecan crumble cake that we make.
Yeah. We had a question from someone earlier about the sort of African-American baking traditions, and I'm wondering to what extent do you incorporate that into what you're doing?
We actually do a lot of things with the African-American community. We have one of the items on our menu, we have a Dirty South, which is inspired from the sweet potato pie. And basically, we buy organic roasted sweet potatoes, we roast them off, and we put bourbon, brown sugar, and our, some fall spice blends in there. So that is kind of like our inspiration, a spinoff from the actual pie version. And we still make actual sweet potato pies.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the rest of you, are you also like buying everything seasonally? You're not going to get, you know, fruit or anything else from, you know, Chile, for example. Or
try not to.
Yeah.
No, we actually don't. We actually buy everything seasonally at the local at our local farmers markets. So we do about 5 farmers markets throughout the Bay Area. We do Old Oakland on Fridays. We do San Francisco at the Ferry Plaza. And then we're also at Grand Lake as well. And then we're also in Marin on Sundays.
All right. Charles, before I let you go, what would you say is the biggest challenge in terms of baking for you?
One of the biggest challenges I would say for me would be you never know how it's actually going to come out, regardless how many times you made it. Because, and I'm sure other bakers will probably agree, because you just never know. Sometimes you can make it 4,000 times, and like one time you make it, and it's like it's something went wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mystery.
You know, sometimes you're doing a recipe, you know, you're experimenting, and you're trying to get it right for a client. And, you know, the trial and error thing is always an iffy thing. But for me, I always try to, I feel I have enough confidence in myself to where I feel like if I try a recipe, I feel like I can recreate it in my own manner.
Yeah. All right. Well, Charles Ferrier, thanks so much for joining us. He's with Crumble and Whisk over in Berkeley, and it sounds like you can find his baked goods around the Bay Area as well. What else for the rest of you, like epic failure come to mind?
God, a million years ago when I started my bakery, I remember the first Christmas being so overwhelmed that when a gigantic mistake was made with, I don't know, the amount of sugar and eggs that went into the mixer for a Genoise. It was just all wrong, and it wasn't happening. And I was too tired, and we decided to discard it rather than do the frugal thing and figure out what to do with it. We flushed gallons of eggs and sugar.
Wow. Yeah,
it was very disheartening, but there was nothing else to do.
What about you, Joyce, Jen?
I'm trying to think of like what my biggest failures are, but like I feel like every baker has.
Yeah. Is there like a most common mistake, you know, people make?
Everything can be a mistake. You can swap the salt for the sugar. You can accidentally mismeasure a recipe, misscaling a recipe. Generally ends in disaster. Mm. You maybe scale for 1x on the eggs and you scale 10x on the butter, and then everything explodes in the oven.
Yeah, I would say one of the biggest things that people often forget in just even repetition and recipes is, you know, missing part of the leavening or all of the leavening, because, you know, the dough looks the same. I feel like you can usually tell pretty obviously if it's missing butter or eggs or has too much flour or whatever it may be. But unless you taste it and you're missing leavening or salt, you know, you don't know till it all goes in the oven.
Yeah. Yeah.
What actually that raises one of the things that makes home baking potentially very sort of grounding, and that is to do that mise en place step, which is where you measure everything out and put it there in front of you. Mm. So you know you have every ingredient, you know you have every piece of equipment, and so it's harder to forget something.
Yeah.
And it also prepares you to sort of go into the actual measuring and preparation like a little dance. And so, and that's very
less stressful.
It's very.
And you're probably less likely to make a mistake.
Definitely less likely. Yeah. It's always possible.
A lot of bakers also taste raw dough before it goes in the oven, just to double and triple check, like, that the salt is in there or that the proportions taste kind of right.
And what would, like, what would it make taste too salty or too
raw? If you taste it and it doesn't have any salt in there, then you can very quickly remedy that sort of thing and dump a little bit in there. Or if it doesn't taste like it had enough vanilla, you just, you know, douse a little bit more in there. But it does not save you from the leavening problem.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the phones. And Mary in Sacramento, you're next.
Hi.
Hi there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Hi, I'm on my Bluetooth, so I'm driving. I just wanted to share that I have been sort of in the throes of finding out that I can't do wheat and sugar. Ha ha, there you go. So my friend was making some biscotti, and I said, well, let me have that recipe. She said it was a good one, and I'm not a baker, but I followed it, but I used probably about one-third coconut flour and two-thirds almond flour. Mm-hmm. And I used monk fruit instead of sugar, but just the same amount.
We have three bakers shaking their heads.
I'll let you finish.
Drier.
Don't do that. Try cup for cup. Cup for cup is my favorite gluten-free flour if you're going to go gluten-free.
Or, honestly, there's a lot of naturally gluten-free whole grain flours that add a wonderful depth of flavor. There's a lot of things that are not so... I find a lot of the gluten-free substitute flours are pretty starchy and, like, give you kind of a sandy texture. But, I mean, millet, teff, buckwheat, I mean, the list goes on and on. Yeah. Oat, like, I... Yeah.
Alice?
Yeah, my most recent book is called Gluten-Free Flavor Flours, and it's mostly baking with whole grain, naturally gluten-free flours, and it sorts out some of these issues.
What about the sweeteners?
The sweeteners is another issue. You can often, I don't know whether you can have no sugar or you just want to cut down, but a lot of recipes can be very good with way less sugar than the recipe is.
Or an unrefined sugar.
Or an unrefined sugar,
if that
works. Maybe
using some black shot molasses in there, adding some nice depth of flavor that way.
Or what about honey?
Agave or honey.
Then you have to deal with the transfer of dry to wet, but that's doable. But on the gluten-free side of it, it's really better to find a recipe that works, that's good, rather than try to, you know, turn a cat into a dog. Because people underestimate how different flours will behave in things.
Yeah. And they weigh
and
the proportion.
And how they weigh how they measure. Yeah. And coconut flour is a very big troublesome thing. Mm-hmm. It's useful in small quantities,
but
it's really not a cup for cup.
And we've got a comment here from a listener. Heidi Jane says, adding a teaspoon of xanthan gum powder per cup of gluten-free flour changes everything gluten-free into something of normal taste and texture.
It depends on what you're
It depends on what you're using.
It can be gummy.
Yeah.
And people overuse it. It doesn't agree with some people. Using it isn't a bad idea in certain recipes. But again, starting with a recipe that you know works, unless you're an avid experimenter and willing to deal with hundreds of mistakes, of not so good
baked goods. A lot of frustration.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Bernadette in San Jose, you're next. Welcome.
Hello. I just wanted to, well, first of all, I'm going to put a plug in for the King Arthur flour line for the person who asked, is there a site where you can ask questions? And they do have a lot of gluten-free recipes as well. But what I really called in was the statement early on about weighing the ingredients versus using measuring cups. I bake my great-grandmother and my grandmother's cookies, and the recipes do not have weights. Some of them are handfuls. Most of them are using measuring cups, and they turn out fine. And I teach a lot of my neighbors' children how to bake cookies at Christmas time. They come over. We have a big party. And the thing about weighing ingredients, I think, really puts a lot of new bakers off because it just seems so much more stressful. And I think cookies are a lot more forgiving than cakes or cheesecakes or other things where the weight of the other ingredients really matter.
Thoughts
and,
about
yeah,
that.
I mean, I think how, what's great in your case is that you saw your grandmother do it and you know how it looks and how it should feel. But a lot of people are learning to bake from zero. And measurements and weights, it's kind of like a communication. It's a way of telling somebody how you did it and letting them be able to do it without seeing you do it. So it's not that there aren't marvelous bakers like you who can do this by feel, but there are so many people who want to learn to bake and don't have the advantage of doing it with somebody like you in your kitchen.
And Alice Medrash, you know, we talk about, I think most people have grown up using measuring cups.
Yes, right, right.
What about like teaspoons and measuring spoons? Same thing?
Same concept too there. Yeah. You should weigh it. And I use a
microscope. It seems like it would take a lot longer.
No. It's actually a lot faster because you don't have to wash a spoon every single time you need to measure something new between wet and dry ingredients as well.
All right. Well, Bernadette, thanks very much for the call. And let's go now back up to Sacramento. And Pat.
Yes. Double the volume of meringue for a pie or I think anything else. Add 1 tablespoon of water to every egg white.
For meringue.
For meringue.
All right. That's it. Have you heard about that?
No.
You guys are not, you're more definitely on the cookie trail more than baking.
And cookie. No, I'm a cake person, too. Yeah. I'm a meringue person. Yeah.
Cookies. Why would you need to do that, Pat?
You can make meringues for other things that we never did. We found it in my one cookbook that Mother had as a chip. It was funny. My grandmother had carefully wiped out her main mixing bowl to get rid of all water before that.
All right. Well, also, go ahead.
In the Depression, there was a saying, easy on the butter, kid, it's 40 cents a pound.
We all love it.
All right.
Love it.
Pat, thanks very much for the call.
I wish it was 40 cents a pound.
I know. Yeah. Boy. Really? Yeah. What is the, that's a good question because you can see butter anywhere from $2.99 or less sometimes to $5-$6.
Yeah, right.
What's the difference?
Some of it's cultured and lower moisture, so that's, it's going to be more special or it's organic.
Or it's, run-of-the-mill butter. Regular,
or overpriced.
Or
sometimes, depending on where you shop. Mm-hmm. And unsalted all the time?
Bakers tend to, because we're very controlling. We like to control
the salt. You don't know how much salt is in
there. You never buy salted butter, not for a baked good.
Yeah. Here's some comments. Francis writes, please ask which chocolate chips are the favorite of the guests, and do they use parchment when baking cookies?
Always use parchment.
Parchment is a cleaner, faster way to go. I mean, there's lots of tricks that can speed up and make you more productive with cookies if you use parchment.
Does it change the transfer of heat?
It insulates, but for home bakers, it's actually a good thing. It doesn't change it,
enough
that much.
To
but if people have poor cookie sheets
or too thin ones or dark ones,
that parchment paper helps actually just a tiny bit.
And you can do batch after batch, without having to wait for them to cool. And
you can just slide that sheet off and slide a new sheet of scooped cookies on there, even if the sheet's hot.
And Jen, what about chocolate chips?
Chocolate chips, so many options. I'm a huge fan of Guittard chocolate. We use a lot of their chocolate in our baking. I love dark, bittersweet chocolate. So my favorite is 72% chocolate disc. We actually use very few chips in our cookies and lots of discs. So that way you get those lovely striations of chocolate when you bite into it.
What do you do, chop it? Or
Not chop necessarily, but when they bake out, you just have layers of chocolate rather than chips. I don't think we've used chocolate chips and our chocolate chip cookies in
a long time.
Long time.
Yeah. Joyce.
We're the same. We use Valrhona Fevs. I like Satilia, especially for my chocolate chip cookies. And they come in fairly large discs as well. And they make shards of chocolate as they bake into the cookies, which just add for an extra depth of flavor that you don't normally get in the chips, which have tons of stabilizers and emulsifiers that you don't really want in your chocolate chip cookie.
So, of course, when I was a kid, my mother, when she wasn't cutting the tubes of dough, was using Nestle chips.
Toll House.
Those are, and there's even, of course, the famous Toll House chocolate chip recipe.
In the world of chips, I think Guittard, for people who like baking chips, I think Guittard makes some of the best ones.
Yeah.
But
many
of us do like to either use the discs or the Fevs or just chop bars so that you get, it's a more handcrafted look, a little less commercial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the flavors and the melt in the mouth is superior.
Yeah.
And combining different.
And you can, you
different
can
chocolate chips in the same recipe is awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, and don't forget the salt. I put a heavy hand of Maldon sea salt on top of my chocolate chip cookies, and I find that just kind of takes it up an extra notch.
Before they bake,
Throw on a little Maldon sea salt. don't do kosher, but flaky sea salt.
Why not kosher? It's funny because I actually took a cooking class this past weekend.
Too salty.
Yeah. Is that true with baking as well? I mean, and cooking generally?
No. Regular for baking, use kosher salt in the recipe. But for finishing salt, I like something a little bit more flaky so that it doesn't hit your palate all at once. There's a little crunch, and then you get little pockets of saltiness, not necessarily all in your face.
It's the fact that it's a fine flake rather than a little nugget, so it doesn't hit you.
I see.
It's not pyramidal and not flat.
Yeah, okay. Here's a comment from Kala, who writes, I substitute white whole wheat flour for all-purpose flour when baking, but things always turn out a little drier than desired, especially with quick breads and cookies. Any suggestions?
Go half and half, for example. Experiment by doing that. That can be delicious, but sometimes when you just make a huge change like that, you get unnecessary, unexpected results.
Generally,
and a lot of the whole grain flours are just much more absorbent. You've got the bran in there, and you've got, I mean, those are going to drink up all of the liquid in your recipe, so just knock down the dry ingredients a bit until it's the right consistency.
All right, and Hernan writes, I made a cranberry curd tartlet for Thanksgiving, and it was great. I decided to experiment with different fruit. I started with persimmon, but it didn't go well. I think I just overcooked it, but I was wondering if the panelists have advice about which fruits do work and don't for fruit curds. Jen, any thoughts about that?
Well, for fruit curd, like a lemon curd or a cranberry curd, you're counting on the tartness of the fruit and the amount of balanced by the amount of sugar, and that's what gets you that. The texture of a curd, persimmons don't have that characteristic at all, so maybe you'd want to make a jam
instead.
Wonder
if he's using the wrong kind of persimmon?
I think
persimmons are very sweet.
They are pretty sweet,
not
so
really
maybe simmering it into a jam instead. In other words, don't expect that curd quality. Mm-hmm. Use way less sugar and just simmer a little bit and see if it comes out jam-like and use it as a jam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones and up to Sonoma. Debbie, welcome.
Hi, good morning. My question has to do with sugar, and I've had not much success in trying to substitute the fine baking sugar and making cakes in particular with the bulk section granulated sort of brown sugar. Not brown sugar, but raw sugar.
Raw sugar.
Mm-hmm. What's the story? So I have to use the fine sugar.
If the brown sugar that you're using is more crystalline rather than soft, you could try spinning it in the food processor to get it to be finer.
Mm-hmm. But the taste and the color.
Joyce, do you want to say
that? Very well.
Yeah.
No.
What about evaporated cane?
Like, what is your main goal of substituting the sugar? Like, is there a particular reason?
Because it's organic. You can't buy organic fine baking sugar.
Okay. Sure.
So evaporated cane can be organic, right? Mm-hmm. Try spinning it in the food processor and getting that granulation down. Have you tried that?
I have, actually.
And?
It's pretty volatile.
What do you mean by volatile?
The dust.
You have to cover up. You definitely have to cover up the processor.
But, you know, that's the least of the problems, I guess. But it's just it seems like the white fine sugar that you buy that's not organic is the way to go. No?
It's easier because it's consistent in size. But it's not to say that you can't make. But what are you trying to make with the sugar now?
Oh, a cake.
Just a normal cake.
Like a layer cake?
Chiffon?
Exactly. Something lighter and fluffier.
It's going to take a little bit of fooling around and experimentation because our entire baking repertoire, at least Western, is based on refined sugar. Mm-hmm. So all of the recipes are sort of perfected with that ingredient. So when you change the nature of the ingredient, you have to make some other changes and adjustments.
Okay.
Yes. All right, Debbie, thanks very much for the call. Again, the number is 866-733-6786. And let's go to Valerie in San Francisco. You're next.
Hi.
Hi.
So I want to get some advice. I was at the Middle Eastern Food Festival in San Francisco in the fall, and I had this wonderful sesame cookie with a fig filling. It was sort of a rolled cookie. Mm. And I've been trying to replicate it, and I'm not, and I've tried finding recipes for it in Middle Eastern cookbooks, and I couldn't find anything. And I've tried using a pie dough, and it's not quite right because the dough that was used wasn't quite so buttery. Mm. And I don't know if you can give advice.
There's a very good
having the cookie.
Sesame. I don't know what the texture of your cookie, but my friend Amelia Salzman made a sesame butter cookie that's very delicious. And her book is The Seasonal Jewish Kitchen.
Okay.
Lovely cookie.
Yeah.
And the key to that, I think she used tahini in that. That's where she's getting the.
Huh.
And, yeah. So that might be, if you're still in the experimental mode, you could try using tahini and substitute for some of the butter in a butter cookie or shortbread kind of thing.
And was it a rolled cookie?
It was a rolled cookie.
So the jam was rolled into the.
Yeah, the jam was rolled into it. So I tried using a pie dough, spreading the.
Why don't you try using a shortbread, like a more of a shortbread dough than a pie dough?
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, butter cookie shortbread, that sort of texture.
And toast your sesame seeds
before you make cookies. If you're using seeds, toast.
That'll make an extra.
All right.
Flavorful.
All right, Valerie. Lots of advice there. Hopefully, some of that works out for you. Nina asks, "Do you always have to go with what tastes best?" An episode of Nailed It ran into this issue. The judges went with the worst looking cake, but it tasted the best. You're all in the business of selling things, so I'm not sure you're going to want to sell something, Jen, that doesn't look really good.
Well, I think it definitely comes down to the application. So, are you gifting this, or are you enjoying this at home with family? So maybe you have an epic failure and it tastes delicious, but it's not super beautiful.
Pile some whipped cream on it.
Yeah, there's a time and a place for everything. So
I always prioritize flavor over beauty, but beauty sells. So. It depends on what you need to do with said product.
Yeah. And then Sadie asks, been inspired by the Great British Bake Off, which is, I guess, what they call it in Britain. We call it the Great British Baking Show. But try making some savory cookies. Any recommendations for savory cookies? Mm. Jen? Alice?
I made arugula out of goat cheese that was very nice. Well, actually, it was a sweet filling, but the arugula dough was goat cheese instead of cream cheese. And it could take a savory filling that you could roll it up with. I think I also made a cheddar thumbprint cookie with cheddar in there.
Yeah.
Maybe in my column, food52.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some great, I think, shortbread or butter cookies work really well for savory, bacon, herbs, things like that are great. Mm-hmm. You can use this time of year rosemary sage, doing like a brown butter rosemary shortbread, decreasing the sugar. One thing I always find when going on the savory side is you do have to expect some adjustments in texture because you are decreasing the sugar in a classic recipe. So just sort of know what you're getting into. But savory elements play in very, very well with cookies.
All right.
Savory sweet.
You could look at a classic recipe for cheese straws and riff off of that since
or
that's already in place.
Caramelized onions are also a really good ingredient that straddles both sweet and savory world.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay. All right. Ricardo in Oakland, welcome.
Hey, hi. Thank you for taking my call. My wife might be listening to this program, so I don't use my real name because she might listen to this. So I was in the market. She's been, after the show, she loves baking now. She's been trying to bake in, she bakes certain things. So I was thinking about giving her a book for baking, and I went to the store, and there are so many books. So I was wondering if you can direct me to the right direction to say, maybe this is a good book, not too complicated. She's not trying to be the master chef of the baking, but she's having a lot of fun every time that she bakes. So,
what would you like to see her making,
Ricardo? Every time that she fails.
What would you like to see her make?
She's been doing banana bread, she's been doing pumpkin bread, she's been doing a lot of kind of like natural breads, like doesn't require that much scientist onto. But now she's kind of like, ooh, I should make a cranberry cake, or maybe I should do some kind of cake, right? And I look and say, okay, honey, sure. Mm.
Any suggestions for, he's right, there are so many options out there. And there's also like digital books as well. Right, I don't know what you think about those.
Well, you could Google my name, Alice Medrich. And I have 10 books to choose from. A lot have to do with chocolate. One is gluten-free. I have cookie books. You could check that out. There are other marvelous cookbook authors out there. You guys can name them.
It sounds like your wife is really into cakes. I might recommend the Cake Bible for her. Mm-hmm. I think that might be a great starting point for someone that's just starting off with cake, potentially.
All right, Ricardo. Hopefully your wife didn't hear you, but you know you're trying to do a good thing here, so you got some time still to buy a good book. Thanks so much, and hope that works out for you. All right, let's go to Asa. Asa in Berkeley, welcome.
Thank you. My question is about baking with fruit. I find that if I, say, cook with berries or plums, they're sweet when they're fresh, but they're tart when they're baked, whereas a fruit like an apple, when you bake it, stays sweet. I'm wondering if you had thoughts on that and ideas on how to work with that.
All right. Thanks for that. We're getting short on time. What are you trying to make, Asa?
These are crisps, pies, or baked into cakes.
Any thoughts?
Start with a recipe.
Yeah.
And if you know it's going to be tart, I would probably bump up a little sugar and make sure you balance out that acidity a little bit at the beginning before it gets baked into your product, too.
Some crisps, too, have you cook the fruit with the sugar first before you put on a topping, and that's an opportunity to give a little taste and make a little adjustment before you'd put the topping on.
All right. Asa, I hope that helps out. Thanks very much for calling in. And thanks to you all, Jen Musty from Batter Bakery, Joyce Tang, founder and owner of La Chinoiserie Bake Shop, Alice Medrich, whose latest book is called Holiday Cookies, the Ultimate Chewy, Gooey, Crispy, Crunchy Treats. Thanks so much for coming in. Are you going to be doing some baking today?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. This weekend.
All right, great. Well, and we have we're going to be the beneficiaries. The newsroom is going to be very excited when we walk out with some treats. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Mina Kim. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.